Okay, tonight I'd like to just finish up with 2 points from the previous shiurim. We discussed in one of the shiurim about making fleishig bread or milchig bread. We spoke about that. What are the eitzes to be able to do it? But I forgot to mention that there's another halacha, that bread that's on the table at the time when one is eating fleishig or one is eating milchig cannot be used with the other type. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein explains that this is if the bread is cut up and there on the table, ready for someone to take from it while they're eating the fleishig, while they're eating the milchig. If the bread is removed before the actual fleishig comes out, even though it's a fleishig meal, then that bread could be used with milchig. Or if the bread's on the table but it's in a bag, or it's still a whole loaf and you have to cut it, so then that could be used. But the sliced up challah, the sliced up bread that's on the table at the time when you're eating fleishig or milchig cannot be used with the other type. This halacha is specifically said by bread, like we mentioned, because bread is something that's eaten by all meals. Whether it applies to other foods, such as dips, or other parva foods that were put on the table or not, that's already a logical call. Now, that's if you have children at the table where they're not careful, they'll touch it with their greasy fingers, or they'll stick the spoon, they'll take the spoon and touch their plate with it and then put it back, then obviously you cannot eat it with the other type. It won't make you fleishig if you eat it, or that bread that was on the table while eating fleishig will not make you fleishig. You just can't eat it, you cannot eat it with milk. So again, all other foods, it just, you have to figure out, does it make sense that it's still parif and could be used with the other type? The second point we were discussing around the appliances in the kitchen. So we discussed the oven, the microwave, the stovetop. I don't remember if we discussed the dishwasher. A dishwasher. So a dishwasher is as follows. There are different types of dishwashers that work in different ways, which may make a difference. So if someone wants to ask a specific question, sometimes they may get a different answer. But in general, the minhag is to set it aside either for milchig or fleishig. If someone bought a dishwasher and they're not sure what the previous owner used it for, or maybe you know what they used it for and it was not for our level of kashrus, so then you could kashrut it by just doing a run without any dishes in it, that'd be enough to kashrut it. Theoretically, to go from milchig fleishig, you may be able to do it as long as everything's clean, the rack, the drawers and the racks are clean, but it's not suggested. Suggested to use it for either fleishig or milchig, and in specific cases one can ask.
But what if it was trade? Like if you move into a new house that's
so
like
the
the
best
freezer
thing,
doesn't
so the best thing is to do one run without anything in there, and if possible to buy the new racks, that would be the best thing. Can't, then as long as the racks are clean and they're in there when you're doing that run, it'll be fine. Okay? Now, sinks. Some houses there's one sink, some houses have two sinks. If there's only one sink, the safe way to deal with it is by buying racks. You buy one of those grates like that they put down on the bottom of the sink so the dishes always sit on the grate and don't sit on the floor of the sink. Then I don't think you'll be able to deal, then you will not run into any issues. You should, best thing is to buy one for milchig, one for fleishig, and maybe one for parif, and you put it in the sink, put the dishes on it, and then everything will be fine. Yeah.
There could be no issue of like backlog of the water.
No, won't be an issue. Yeah.
Is it a problem if you have like very few dishes? Let's say you're washing two plates of cups and the milk is all grated on the bottom, and it's like annoying to switch it for like two dishes. Is it a problem
as long
with
as
tap water?
afterwards you just clean the, no, that won't be a problem. As long as you make sure there's no pieces of fleshing left over there.
Right. Because if it's metal and you're cleaning out like a melted cup, like it's not a
usually
problem that the next time you put
usually you probably won't run into a problem, but again, it's safer to switch the racks. But take it out and just wash it without putting it down. Okay. Now let's move on to other halachas that come up in the kitchen. Let's start with blood spots and eggs. So the truth is that the blood spots that we're worried about in the eggs are from those eggs that are being used, fertilized eggs, which from this blood spot would cover chicken. That's what we're really worried about. The eggs that we get are not fertilized eggs, and there's no chicken that's going to come from it. However, the minig is that we do check for blood spots. We do check for blood spots, and the minig is that if we do find a blood spot, then we throw out the whole egg. However, because they're not fertilized eggs, if one forgot to check the eggs, or they were in a rush and they didn't have time to check the eggs, whatever the situation was, or they thought they checked it and now after they mixed it into the mixture with whatever they're mixing it with, the flour and whatever may be in the mixture, now they see there's a red blood spot there, so then they should try to take out that, just the blood spot itself. If they can't, it's still mutter. But again, the minig is to check, and if we do, finally throw out. However, if one did not do it, then there's room to be makel. Perhaps the organic eggs, or there's another type of eggs, if I would call something. But the organic eggs could be those are fertilized. I don't know. But in general, the eggs that you buy in the store are not. Sometimes, it's good to know, sometimes you'll see that there's a pink. It looks pink. That's coming from the stamp. For some reason, they decided to stamp it with a pink stamp. So a lot of times that gets rubbed off into the white of the egg, and you see that pink there. That's not a problem. It has to be red. It has to be blood. Also, if one sees the blood spot is usually in the yellow, not in the white. If one does see in the yellow, one does find it in the yellow. So again, the meaning is to try to get rid of it. However, if one did not, it's not a problem like we said before. And especially if it's in the white, also there's much more room to be makel. Now, there are those that have the minik. It was the old minik, and they used to use real fertilized eggs to have a egg pot, or to have a pot that they cook in it always three eggs, in case one of them has a real blood spot. So then it'll be one to two, which the one, whatever bleeds, whatever taste comes from that one egg will be butthole the other two. However, this minik is not accepted everywhere, and especially nowadays, one does not need to be makban on having such a pot. Okay, now there are certain things which is mentioned in the paiskim not to leave overnight, like a peeled onion or a peeled garlic, which means that the hairy parts of the garlic or the roots were cut off. So you have a peeled onion or a peeled garlic or a cracked egg or a peeled egg, which was left overnight. Now what's called left overnight? Overnight means from shkia until nates, until the morning. So if let's say I peeled it at 9 o'clock at night and then I left it overnight, that's not called overnight. Overnight is from shkia until nates. Now, what are the eights? I want to prepare my onions or my eggs for Shabbos, already Thursday night. So what are the eights? One eights is that should be mixed with something else. I can put it in a container with water, or I can mix oil into it. If there's enough oil that's on, it's considered mixed with oil. Just sprinkling some salt is not enough. Another eight is, and this may be a simpler eight is, that as long as I cut the onion into pieces, or I cut the garlic or the egg into pieces, even if I didn't make it into very small pieces, but I cut it into pieces, then there is no problem. And one can leave it the way it is. You don't have to mix it with anything. You can leave it overnight. Scallions seem to be a discussion of Paiskim, if it's like onions or not like onions. Again, the best thing is to cut them into small pieces, into pieces, and then you won't have the issue. Yes?
Is it okay if you leave the hairy part on? Like if you only, yeah. Like, let's say red onion, yeah, like I use a little bit every single day, so like if I just cut and leave that, it's fine.
That's a good idea, yeah. Yeah.
And if you leave it in the fridge, it's still the same thing?
Right.
Like peeled eggs Friday morning for Shabbos lunch, you can't do that?
So cut them or do something to them that they won't be whole.
Okay. What about, like, could you, do you still need to do eggs in, like, odd numbers?
No.
No. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, now, so those are the eights for those things. A piece of shell and put it on the egg. As long as there's a little shell on it, that's also enough. Okay. Another issue that comes up sometimes is blood on chicken. In general, blood on a bought chicken is bought with a good hechsher. It happened by the packaging or somewhere along the way when it was being thrown around, and most of the times, if not almost, I think every time, it's not a problem, unless it's really gathered in one spot, like it looks like blood was like congealed or got thick. Then maybe a question if they did the melicha correctly or not. But like I said, most of the time it just got bruised in the packaging, and you don't really have to worry about it. If you see a bone broken and in the same spot you see some like gathered blood, so then you should speak to a rav or show it to a rav if it's an issue or not. Now the hafrashas challah. There's a mitzvah to separate from the dough challah and give it to the kohen. That's the mitzvah in the Torah. Nowadays, we don't give it to the kohen, but we still separate the challah from the dough. And it's one of the mitzvahs of a woman, like halakas neiris, is a mitzvah that belongs to the lady of the house. So too, the mitzvah challah. Right, that's why by halakas neiris, we go after the minig of the woman's family. She goes baser her mini on how many candles to light and things like that. There's a halacha by challah that if a man does the afrasha and the lady comes home and says she's not masking to what he did, she could do afrasha again. It's one of the mitzvahs of the isha, the lady. Now, this mitzvah of afrasha's challah is applicable to a dough made from any one of the five grains, which is wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and oats. If a dough is made from rice, corn, or potato starch, it does not need hafrasha. And even if there's a mixture of the five grains, some wheat with spelt, or rye, that will also make it that one needs to separate the challah from this dough. How much flour does one need to use in order to have to separate challah from this dough? So there's two shiurim. One is without a bracha, and one is with a bracha. Without a bracha, it's about 1.2 something kilos, which means a little more than one bag. Then you mafish without a bracha, which is around 3 pounds, and I'm not sure how many cups, around 3 pounds. If you have a little more than 2 kilo, a little more than 2 bags, then it's with the bracha, which is 5 pounds with the bracha. The bracha is, Asher Ketshanu, Mitzvah Tzivanu, lahafrish challah, and you make the bracha before you mafrish. What you do is you hold on to the piece that you will be mafrish, the piece that you're about to separate, you hold on to it, then say the bracha, and then if they say the bracha, you mafrish. When by mitzvahs, we always make the bracha before we do the mitzvah. So before we separate the challah, which is the mitzvah, then we separate it. You can do this is when it's dough. It has to be dough. If it's just flour or flour and some water and it didn't become a dough yet, or it didn't turn into a dough, it's not considered a hafrasha. It has to be dough. Once it's dough, then you could. If, let's say, one forgot to be mafresh while it's dough, they can still do it after it's already braided or baked, even if one forgot to do it. If, let's say, one forgot to be mafresh it as it's dough, and they already baked the challahs, so they put the challahs together, and they take off a piece from one of the challahs. In a case where we're sitting down to the Shabbos meal, and we realize, you know, I meant to do it, but I didn't do it, I was never mafresh challah from this. So now there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, the Zeitzah, eat from the challah, but leave over a piece at the end that you'll be able to be mafresh from that piece that you're leaving over. That's fine in Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, that's not Eitzah. I'm not going to get into the why, but that's not Eitzah. In Eretz Yisrael, you're stuck. However, there may be one or two other Eitzahs, but if you don't have other challah as a rav, there may be Eitzah by getting a girl who's 11 years old or a boy who's 12 years old and really loves your challah. So since he's still cut, but he's at the age where he could be mafresh, maybe he'll decide to be mafresh because he wants to eat your challah. And then he'll be allowed to do it. But again, make sure to do it before Shabbos. If it's a loose batter, like a cake batter, so usually there's no issue of challah because in our homes we're not baking enough that should be chayim challah. However, if one is baking enough of a loose batter, so then the challah is taken off after it's baked. You don't take it off from the liquidy batter. You take it off if it's baked, when it's challah. What do we do with the challah? So like we mentioned before, the Torah really says we should give it to the kohen. But nowadays, since it's tamei, we don't give it to the kohen. So the next best thing would be to burn it. There's different ways of burning it. One could put on the stovetop in a foil on top of the burner and just turn on the fire and it will burn. To put it in the oven, you have to be careful it doesn't touch the walls of the oven, and also it will take a long time for it to, the outside will burn, but the inside won't burn so quickly. Or you can take, if you have a can, and burn it in the can, or if you have another etzah. That would be, of course, the second best etzah, the best etzah to burn. However, in any case where one is not able to burn it, they don't like the smell, or it just doesn't work, so then you can double wrap it and throw it out. Double wrap and throw it out. To leave it in your freezer and wait until Pesach and sometime like that is not the best etzah, because every year people call up afterwards, I forgot, I meant to burn it before Pesach, I meant to burn it, I meant to get rid of it, and still sitting in my freezer, and I was there over Pesach. So okay, it could be it was included in the mechira to the guys, so you weren't over, but still, it's not geshmak. So therefore, there are some boxes in Shlaim to drop off the dough, what the mafresh, but you don't have to do that. You can just double wrap it and throw it out if you need to. Yeah.
I was told that in Eretz Yisrael, if you burn it on your stovetop when you're oven, it makes a tree. Is that true?
Oil, what?
I don't know. Like overseas, it's fine, but here it like makes a tree, so you have to double wrap and throw it. I don't know why I was told that.
I was told in the oven.
Right. In the oven. In the oven, there are those that say that. But since I said last week that in the oven, anything which is dry is not going to... That's why I said, if you do it in the oven, just make sure it doesn't touch the walls of the oven. It won't be a problem. But yeah, there are those that say that.
Okay, yeah. Two questions. Can you put it directly on the stovetop, or you have to put it in foil?
So the truth is the fire burns out whatever blade is going there, but I think practically it would make sense. You don't want it to burn onto to your burner.
Right. Okay. And also, if you're buying baked dough, to like make cinnamon buns, or like you're buying dough,
Probably they did it already.
Oh, they did it?
Some people do it again afterwards just to be machmir. But, I mean, if you're buying from good action, they probably did it when they made fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much
do you have to take off? Oh, okay. That's a good point. It's like this. If you're not making a bracha, you can take off as small as you want, even a small piece, whatever. If you're making a bracha, so then the meaning is to take off like a kezias, which is not big. You know, olive is like this big. It's around that big. That's all. A small piece.
I thought a kezias was the size of an egg nowadays. Is that true? Or
for certain halachas, but not for when you're throwing it out.
So they have to burn it into the inside, or it's not from the outside?
If you're burning it, it has to burn.
Because I remember learning that it's being out that it burns, so the dog wouldn't eat it.
It's not burnt. Why would it eat the inside? Because the dog's not eating your dough anyways.
Right.
So that's a bad measurement. But dogs here are very picky. Cats are also. Now, if you have different doughs that were baked separately, and each one was baked less than the shear. Now, if I put all these different types of doughs that were baked together, it would equal the shear. So if I would put it in a box, or I put it on a towel and then wrap it, then it will become chayim chali, and it was baked already. However, just putting it in the freezer and being in the freezer together is not going to make it chayim chala. You don't have to worry about it. What happens if someone was mafresh challah, before I talk about that, now let's say I'm making doughs, I'm making challah, and I'm making some other cookies or something, which I would be makbid that the doughs should not touch each other. I would wash out the bowl in between. Also, then we're not mitzarif the two doughs together. If I'm not going to have to use the same bowl, but if I would use the same bowl for both those, then I could really put them together and then they would add to each other for the shir challah. If let's say someone was mafresh challah, put it on the side, and by mistake the child came and threw it back in, or somehow got put back into the dough, what do I do now? So, well, what it has to do is they have to do what's called she'ela. It's like a neder. Hafrashas challah is a neder. That's why we said before a girl who's 11, a boy who's 12, because they're nedarim on nedarim. So they can do hafrasha. Hafrashas challah is like making a neder. The halacha is that if someone makes a neder and then they do she'ela, they in front of three men, they express how they have charata on what they did, on the neder that they made. Then the three men can say matalach, 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 and the neder no longer exists. So we also traded and now it's put back in. We need to call together three men. Husbands and sons, which are over by mitzvah, could be included also in this. And either you or your husband could tell them what happened, and they'll be matter the neder by saying matalach, matalach, matalach. Another din which comes up, and I think people confuse, that there's halacha that if the dough is going to be divided, but again, the dough, if I'm making a dough, a nice big dough, a mother-in-law is making a dough, that she's going to divide the dough between all her daughters and daughter-in-laws. She's going to give everyone a piece of dough for them to make challah. So even though she's making a dough that is the shear, there's no chiv challah. But if she's going to be baking the challah, and then giving out baked challahs, then she takes off challah. So when you go to these parks and they're making doughs to make pita or whatever they're making, there's no chiv challah because they're giving out the piece of dough. They're dividing it as dough. So you're not chayim challah. But if they'll be dividing challahs, then there'll be a chiv challah on the person who's making it. There's any questions on that?
Yeah. I remember learning that because I used to make a lot of dough and like freeze rolls unbaked. And I learned that if you're not baking it at the time, then you don't make a bracha. Like the bracha is only made if you're going to be baking the challah then.
I disagree with that, and I think it's a mistake.
So if you're making enough dough, but you're not going to be freezing it for like 3 weeks later.
Right now I'm making dough that I'm going to be using. Right now it's chayim challah. I'm not dividing it as dough to give out to other people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where the issue comes. When they do these challah, what are they called? Challah programs. What? Challah, right. So they're giving out the doughs to everyone. So what you could do is you could make a few big doughs, each one of 2 kilo, few 2 kilo doughs, and sort of give the dough to one person and they'll take up challah. I mean, you have to play the shtick to work it out, but it's not that's where it gets tricky. If it's my dough and I'm not giving anyone the dough for them to own until after it's baked, I'll let everyone take home a challah, so then I could do it. But if I'm giving everyone dough and this is gonna be their dough that they're making and baking and all that, then there's no chiv hafrasha. I don't know exactly how they work that out. Yeah.
I don't know if Rob mentioned this, but I remember learning. So let's say I have like a lot of bowls of dough and I want to be mafresh, so I could just put it all together with a towel over it.
As long as you're not makbid that they should be separate. I mean, if you wouldn't mind if one dough touched the other dough, or if I had to make this dough in that bowl which I made the other one in, then yeah, but if there's a hakpada that I don't want them touching each other, then they're not going to join.
Right, if it's all challah though, let's say it's all the same.
For sure.
And is that the same also with, let's say, they're rising, but you didn't cook them yet, and you realize you weren't mafresh, so you could also cover it with a towel and tape. That's enough to consider it, or you don't have to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to.
You don't have to do it.
Okay, just one more point. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we have trumas and maisers. Fruits, vegetables. There's halacha, then we have to separate trumas and maisers. And it's because of that we can't just walk into any fruit store like in Chutz Arts, where we could just walk into any fruit store and just buy a beautiful banana, a beautiful apple. Over here, we need a good hechsher for that reason. Now, let's say one prefers buying from a hechsher which they would not rely on 100%. They're nicer fruit or more of a variety of fruits that they like, or a cheaper price, or they bought it by mistake, or they're going up north, they're going south, and you can't find the store there that's going to be on your standard, or you want to buy a certain orange juice, which may not have the hechsher that you normally rely on. So the issue is, was trumas and maisers separated or not, and it's a suffix whether trumas and maisers was separated or not. There is an etza, and it's not so difficult. The etza is that with the following steps. There's something called the Karen Trumas of Maestros, which is run by Rabbi Frati and someone named Rabbi Reichenberg. And they have a system over there where you could sign up, you call them up, and it's like 40 shekel a year, and you belong to their Karen, which helps you out for what's called Maisa Sheni and Maisa Ani. This year, you have to take off from the fruits to give to the Ani. They take care of that for you. However they work it out, they have some deal with the Ani, they have it worked out. You belong to that Karen. All you need to do now is take off a little more than 1/100, a little more than 1% from each type of fruit or vegetable that you have. And then there's a nusach that they'll send you, they'll email you, that you say, a nusach that you say, and then you can just eat the fruits and vegetables the way it is. And then you don't have to worry about the chuvas and maizes, even if maybe a week or hechsher or something like that. In general, arla, which applies to trees, that we don't eat fruit from within the first 3 years, usually is not an issue. So usually you don't have to worry about that. Therefore, chumas and maizes would be what we have to worry about. And this would be our eitz if someone knows that that's what they want to do. They want to go to the shuk every week or something like that. This would be the eitz for chumas and maizes. Okay. I wish everyone a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, any questions?